Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 21st day of June, Anno Domini 2025, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Benright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news.
Happy summer.
Happy summer to everybody.
Yeah, now the days start getting shorter.
Yep.
As of today.
And we're moving, ironically, we're moving closer to the sun.
Yes.
We're closest to the sun during the winter and farthest away during the summer because it takes 6 months to heat up all this land and ocean.
And before one of you pedantic people call in and tell us days aren't getting longer, they're still 24 hours long. Well, they're not. They're 23 hours and...
23 hours, 59 minutes, and 4 seconds.
4 seconds long. But colloquially speaking, there's less sunshine, so we call it days are getting shorter. Get over yourself.
Less daylight.
Daylight hours are getting shorter.
Daylight hours are, what, we lose two minutes of daylight every day?
Something like that.
Two to two and a half, I think it is.
Depends on, yeah, something like that.
The funny thing was the solstice was at 10:41 p.m. last night.
Yes.
Our time.
Happy solstice to all who celebrate.
My wife is going to a solstice party today. And I said, well, the solstice was yesterday. You're the one that has to celebrate on the exact same day
right. All
the time. She didn't like that.
Really?
Oops.
Okay, security researchers have reported discovering what could be the mother of all data breaches, a set of 30 data breaches containing a total of 16 billion records. This is different from the 19 billion records that were stolen a month or so ago. More worryingly, researchers claim new massive data sets emerge every few weeks, signaling how prevalent info stealer malware truly is. The databases were available to the wider internet only briefly and were quickly locked down. However, it isn't possible to determine who the owners are. It is probable that much of the information overlaps, making it virtually impossible to determine exactly how many people were affected. It's also important to note that some 5.5 billion people have access to the internet today, meaning that many people have multiple compromised accounts. Unprotected databases continue to be the most common cause of data leaks. For years, security researchers have been warning that many organizations do not understand the shared responsibility model of cloud services and that they are required to safeguard and secure the data they generate. It is to say, many of the systems administrators we have out there today are morons. On the other hand, cyber criminals are having a field day with these archives. They often contain more than enough of the sensitive information to launch highly personalized, successful phishing campaigns, leading to identity theft, wire fraud, and even ransomware attacks. If you're concerned you may have been caught up in the incident, don't worry. There are a number of methods to find out. Have I Been Pwned is probably the best resource, only to check if your details have been affected, offering a rundown of every big cyber event of the past few years. And if you save passwords to a Google account, you can use Google's password checkup tool to see if any have been compromised.
Which uses Have I Been Pwned?
Which uses Have I Been Pwned? Yeah. And many password managers also have a built-in password checker, which probably also use Have I Been Pwned. To be clear, this is not a new data breach. These stolen credentials have been circulating for some time. They were then collected and repackaged into a database that was exposed on the internet. By now, you know the drill. Change your passwords, use a password manager, use an authenticator where possible, or as a second choice, text messaging. And never, ever, ever reuse a password. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is 16 billion with a B passwords leaked. And your choices are, I'm using an authenticator, I'm using two-factor authentication, I'm changing my passwords, I'm getting tired of this. So far, we have 33 votes, and shockingly, 25 of them for our I'm getting tired of this.
Well, welcome to once you get hacked.
Yeah.
That's right.
And it, I'll finish your
poll. Yeah, so yeah. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
On Security Now, they've basically stopped covering breaches because every week there's so many of them.
Yeah,
but right. They'll talk about this one because it's so big. In fact, the last...
Well, that's just it. I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah.
There are breaches every week that I could put in the news and I don't bother because, yep. Well...
Yeah, it's,
maybe they get a line in the, you know, like, security news, this yeah. breach.
In the back of, you know, 20-page report.
Yeah.
There was a crazy one. So after all the mess government personnel using Signal to send war records. Yep. Turns out they weren't using Signal. It's not Signal's fault. They were using TMSGNL from an Israeli company. Okay, an Israeli company who uses the open source code for Signal to make their own version so that governments can store the messages, according to the Presidential Records Act. The president and vice president, all their records must be stored right. for their library. So they were using an encryption protocol that had a backdoor built in from an Israeli company. Who knows where it's being stored? Well, we do know where it's being stored now, on an unsecured Amazon web bucket that was breached, and now all of those messages are available to the bad guys. 404 Media did a big investigation on that, and were able to confirm the messages, the attendees to the meetings, and it wasn't just federal; it's state, local governments all over the world are using this tool that has a backdoor built in and nothing secure on it. Yes, your messages are secure end-to-end from phone to phone, and then they're placed in an unsecure storage location.
One of the problems we have is, and it's not just Amazon storage buckets, it's every online storage bucket. They are inherently not secure. You can do a lot to secure them, but they are inherently not secure.
You'd think that Amazon would turn security on by default. Because, especially after all these problems have started coming up. But then, you know, you get locked out of your own account. What do you do?
Right. And security is hard.
Yep.
Look, if I wanted to, I could set up absolutely secure email between you and me.
Yep.
I have to install PGP. I have to create a private key. I have to send you the public key.
We're gonna have a key party.
We have a key party.
Yeah.
You have to install the public key. You have to start using it.
Yep.
It's the old thought experiment. You can turn on any light, but 200 people have to flip their switch simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. The joke about it on Secure Now: the only secure communication is two people standing in an empty field, miles from anybody, under a tarp, naked.
And whispering
in each other's ears.
And that's assuming you trust the other person.
Yeah.
So
yeah, once you tell them your secret, then who knows?
Right.
No, yeah.
Exactly. So, look, if you're going to be secure on the internet, if you're using something like Google Docs, they can be secured. But that means you have to have a very, very strong password on your Google account, which is the same one you use for email and everything else. If your password is 123456, everybody on the planet is reading your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Every single person.
Or password.
Or if it's password. Or trust no one.
Yeah.
So if you have a strong password, the likelihood that they can break your encryption goes down the stronger your password gets. But it's up to you to put in a strong password.
And the thing is, they don't have to break the encryption. You basically think they can't break the encryption.
Right.
What they can do is grab it before it's encrypted on your phone with a malware program.
Right.
Or after it's decrypted at the other end mm-hmm. with malware on the phone.
Right. And so for Google Docs and Google Sheets and all that stuff, again, that's secure based on is your connection secure?
Yeah.
And is your password strong? if you're using something like EnPass to keep your passwords secure. That's encrypted locally, and you can then save that encrypted file on, for example, Google Docs, and it's encrypted separately from Google Docs. So as long as you used a different password for EnPass and a strong password for EnPass, then your passwords are secure. Even if you then use your fingerprint to open it on your phone or whatever, it's still secure.
A lot of people don't realize there's two types of secure. Secure in transit and secure at rest.
Yeah.
Secure in transit we've got down. Everything is pretty much always secure in transit.
As long as you it's HTTPS.
Right, which is the default now.
Right.
You get nasty warnings on the screen when it's not. It used to be you got a warning when it was. Now you get warnings when you're not doing a secure transfer.
Right.
Secure at rest is something no one thinks about.
Right.
Both Windows and Mac give you the option of encrypting the contents of your hard drive.
Yeah.
Which is good for security. BitLocker on Windows and FileVault on the Mac. The problem is it makes the computer more fragile.
Yep.
If one little bit goes wrong,
yep,
you lose everything.
Yep.
Or if you forget your password, you lose everything.
Or if your computer dies, how do you get the data off the old hard drive?
Right.
Yeah, it's you're toast.
Yeah, your data is stored as a blob of noise. No one can read it without the password, not even you.
Right.
And so that makes having a backup safe much more.
When I bought my new computer, it actually came with BitLocker already turned on.
Yeah.
And so I tried installing Linux. I couldn't do it because BitLocker had locked
you out.
Drive.
Yeah.
So I had to go back into Windows, undo BitLocker, which took days. I mean, okay, it's a 4 terabyte drive,
it had to decrypt
and there was
everything.
No data on the drive.
It still had to look at all 4 trillion bits.
unbelievable! Before I could install Linux on it,
yep.
When
you set up a new Mac, Apple asks you if you want to turn on FileVault and gives you all of the benefits of encryption, the safety and security. It never gives you the warning about make sure you have backups, never forget your password.
Right.
Put your encryption key in a safe place.
And how many times does somebody come to you and say, I need this fixed, and you say, what's the password? And they say, I don't know.
I don't have one is worse.
I don't have one.
Yes, you do.
So if you've got something like FileVault or BitKeeper installed on your machine, you better remember the password because they really are secure. They really are.
So don't believe everything you see on TV where someone types on their keyboard for 5 seconds and says, oh, I'm in.
No, the best part is when two people are typing on the same keyboard.
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
Yep. I was watching a movie the other day, and they had a hacker group, and two people were competing to hack into someone's email.
Oh, yeah.
And who's going to get there first?
Yep. That's true.
Yeah.
That is done.
In the same group, yep.
But bottom line, though, I can't feel sorry for anybody that gets hacked that won't take the time, especially when they've got, say, like EnPass on their machine and are just too GD lazy to take the time and effort to set it all up. It doesn't take that much time. And then once you get in the habit of every site that you go to, you create a new and stronger password, it's mindless.
Wow. Two things really will save you months of ache, and one is to have a good password manager that you use correctly and diligently, and the other is multiple backups. Those two things will save you an amazing amount of heartache
until you get all of a sudden your bank account is hacked and somebody's in there. Like a matter of fact, I had it just this past Memorial Day, my wife's card got hacked. And they were having fun with it. They did over close to $700.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because she's gotten now, I've got her, so she only taps.
Tap.
Yep. No more swiping or anything else. Yeah.
Either my watch or my phone.
Yeah, tap.
And if Joe from the bank texts you saying there's a problem, we need your password. No.
Mm-mm.
No.
Anytime you get a there's a problem, send us your password. You call the bank directly, not the number that you're given in the email.
Yeah.
go get it now. Go get your bank's phone number now. Go get your bank's website now. Bookmark it and use it correctly when something like that happens. Go independently to your bank and ask them what's going on.
That PayPal is going around again big time. I had two friends at work all of a sudden say, because they know I work on the computers and that, they come out, I just got this invoice from PayPal. Delete it. Yeah, but what if I says, the only thing that I'll listen to is that you went physically into your PayPal account, not through some email attachment. You logged into your PayPal account and look at what's there. Don't be spoofed by these stupid emails telling you, oh, this and that, and you click on the stupid connection inside of it because you're going to get hacked.
If you feel this is an error, click here.
Right, right.
Yeah. No.
I got one of those the other day. So some company I've never heard of said they were connected to my health organization and they were going to send me something. If you think this is an error, click here. Oh, no. I called my healthcare company. And he said, oh, yes, we're working with them. It's a partnership. Blah, 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 blah. Could you have told me?
Well, that's what the message was just saying.
Yeah. What she said. Well, they sent out that message. No, you tell me it's coming because otherwise I think it's a scam.
Yep. That's why you got to be so leery of all these sites now, like on Facebook and everything else that you see, because they're advertisements. And they're, just there to take your money because they're putting up these ads with AI now. They can create such authentic-looking websites that you would swear on a stack of Bibles in your kids' lives.
No more spelling errors, no more grammar errors.
Yeah, right. They don't have to worry about that because, people, it's looked at, just had all the marks and everything else, like my bank or this site or that site. Yeah. That's their job. They take a little time up front to do that, and then they just sit back and reap in, the money from a few bucks here, a few bucks there. You do that over, a few million people that you send it out to, you're going to make some money.
That's exactly right. All right, we should probably go to the phones and talk to poor Jack from Rochester, New York. I hope you've been patiently waiting, Jack.
Well, I have a question that has to do with what you're discussing.
Ah, go ahead.
So I use a password manager, and I have for years. And then I had LastPass a long time ago when they had those security breaches. So for very important accounts like my bank, I don't use the password manager because I'm worried about someone being able to hack into that. Instead, I have it written into a notebook, and I type it in. And then somebody says, well, no, that's not really secure because somebody can get key logging software and pick up what you're doing. So what's the worst trade-off, worrying about key logging software if I manually put it in or putting it into a password manager where I got to worry about some possible breach?
Okay, so we'll start with the key logger. Many of them are physical. So if you take a look at your machine and there's something sticking out of it you don't remember putting in, then that's a key logger. On the other hand, if it's a software key logger, almost every antivirus program also checks for key loggers.
Yeah.
So as long as you're running an antivirus program, you should be okay. In addition to that, you can, on many computers these days, find a fingerprint reader, either on a laptop or as a USB thing that you can add and set up. And that's more secure. And what's really secure, of course, is if you can use an authenticator. And that's an app on your phone. And you say, okay, I'm going to add Google to the authenticator. And you tell Google and you tell the authenticator. And then every time you go to log into something, not every time, but, and the major things, when you go to log in to something at Google, it will say, what's your code? You then open up the authenticator and type in the 6-digit code.
It's like your password changes every 60 seconds.
Right.
Yep.
So the danger of a password is that someone may get it. So that's why we were told to change your password every 90 days. But what if they got it 89 days ago? So the Authenticator apps, basically the code changes every 60 seconds. So if you open the Authenticator and you're at second 45, wait till it to turn over to the next one.
I can't tell you the number of times I started typing in a number and it changes.
And then the next step, the newest thing is now called passkeys, and more and more companies are supporting it. In fact, Microsoft just put out a community bulletin that they're going to stop using passwords and move everyone to passkeys, where it uses the biometrics in your computer, as Nick was saying, the fingerprint, the face ID, where the website asks your phone, you know, is this Bill? And your phone says face ID and then tells
or
the...
Or thumb,
yep. Thumb, yeah. And then the phone tells the website, yep, that's him. And so by not having a password to lose, that's a lot safer because the other end, look, 16 billion accounts just lost. How many? Right. How many, there was a statistic on how many passwords I think they found in it, but billions.
Right, but in terms of the password manager, if your password manager does local encryption, and your password is strong, because that's the key to the encryption, you're going to be pretty secure. And then you can take that encrypted file and put it anywhere. Put it on your keychain, put it on your a thumb drive on your keychain, put it up on Google Drive, OneDrive, wherever you want to put it. Once it's encrypted with a strong password, yes, it probably can be broken, but not for decades.
And the big issue that LastPass had is that they didn't keep up with encryption standards. Right. And so when the vault was breached and the bad guys got the vault, well, the vault was encrypted. Yeah, but people who had been using LastPass for 20 years, the encryption was really weak back then. And so today's computers can break it by trying, you know, brute force every possible combination of letters and numbers.
Whereas the new version and things like NPass don't have that problem.
PBKDF2.
Right.
100,000 iterations minimum.
Right.
I've been loading Linux Mint Cinnamon on a lot of my computers that aren't Windows 11 compatible.
Sure.
What would be a good password manager that would be compatible with the Cinnamon?
I know for a fact that NPass works with Linux.
Yep.
NPass, okay.
Yep.
Now, the first thing to do is to look in your repositories. I almost said suppository.
Yeah.
Look in your
repository. For all the good that was doing, I could be shoving it up.
Yes. But if hold on. NPass. Yeah, it's NPass is definitely in the Ubuntu repository, so I'm sure it's in, what did you say you were using?
Cinnamon.
I'm sure it's in Cinnamon's as well. It would be in there.
Yep.
When I was, how about in terms of a VPN for Cinnamon?
VPNs are only useful if you trust the company running the VPN.
And they're only really needed if you're trying to connect into your office when you're not in your office.
Right.
They're often used to bypass geographic restrictions, so you can watch British TV when you're not in Britain.
So the idea behind a VPN is that it encrypts all your data as it goes out your computer.
Mm-hmm.
That's already happening with HTTPS. The only other thing that VPNs do is make you pretend to be somewhere else, which isn't particularly useful anymore.
Yeah.
There is a potential issue in that your ISP knows everywhere you're going because they're sending you there.
So does the VPN, so does the other end.
Right, so you're moving, who hides it? So you know, your ISP doesn't know where you are, but the VPN company knows where you are and where you're going.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Well, thank you. You know, I do have one other comment.
Quick.
When I was installing the Cinnamon, I had an issue that the software manager icon, when I clicked on it, it would not expand, would not maximize. All I would see is a flash on the right-hand portion of the screen. And I went through all these threads, hoping to find a solution to it, and I did figure out what it was. I don't know where to post people about it.
Probably in a Linux Mint forum somewhere. like at Reddit or one of those places. We got to take a break. I'm sorry.
Thanks for your help.
Yep, thanks. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Everybody cheer dance. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Still.
And for Jack, just before we got cut off there at the end. So when you find a solution to a problem, you can post it on that company's forum. So Linux Mint has their own forums.
Right.
Cinnamon. As Nick said, Reddit. We'll often have subreddits on specific flavors of Linux, and so
subreddits on everything.
On everything, everything you can think of, and a lot of things you can't.
Yeah,
a lot of things you don't want to.
Yeah.
there's lots of places to publish that stuff, and it's great that you want to because that's the kind of thing that helps the community.
Yeah, it keeps the community going stronger and better protected and a better product.
Right, and also not only to post things. But also, you can go there to find things out.
Yep.
You know, many times when you do a Google search, it leads you to a Reddit post.
Yep.
Which also, you know, goes to the thing of support them. You know, again, through people, you know, supporting instead of just leeching helps make better products.
Yep.
You know, as far as shareware and everything else that we've got out there. So many programs, you know, I've donated, you know, just a few bucks here or a few bucks there. And, you know, I've gotten great support and updates, you know, and they're always thanking me for being a supporter and everything else. And it was like, it was only a few bucks.
Well, I know, same thing with me. Well, I get these emails all the time. Thank you. Well, of course, they're asking for more money, but they are thanking
me
for my what I consider a meager donation.
Yeah.
I like what a lot of people have said, that when I have a question, I'll post the question on Reddit. And then in a different account, go in and post the wrong answer. More people will correct the wrong answer than will have answered the question to begin with.
Right. And half the answers are, well, don't do it that way.
Yeah.
Well, how stupid are you?
The ones I don't like is, I don't know. Well, then don't post.
Right. Yeah, why post if you can't contribute?
Yeah. I see the question, 27 answers. Great. Which would it?
Right.
And they're all, I don't know.
Well, you know, I ran into that one of the software packages that I was trying to, I'm waiting for it to come out. I opposed this one question because of the new, they're going to SQLite.
Right.
And I was asking a question, you know, whether we'll be able to put it out in multiple radios. I got so many other comments that weren't even related to it. And I go, what the fudge?
Yep.
If you're not going to comment on the question, what has it got to do with it? Don't bother answering it.
At least on some forums, you get a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
Yeah.
You can at least thumbs down the ones that are, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Stupidity. Right. They just like to throw a comment in there, I think.
Yep. All right, to the news. Microsoft. Microsoft has announced that it will start updating security defaults for all Microsoft 365 tenants, as they call them. In July, to block access to SharePoint, OneDrive, and Office files via legacy authentication protocols. This is basically what we were just talking about. These changes will also address application access permissions that can expose organizations to unnecessary security risks. The rollout is set to begin in mid-July 2025 with an estimated completion date by August 2025. Bless you, my son. Microsoft acknowledged, and again, a new issue caused by the June 2025 security updates, causing the Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol, or DHCP service, to freeze on some Windows Server systems. On Windows Server systems, the DHCP service automates assigning IP addresses and other network configurations, reducing network administration and ensuring reliable IP access configuration in Windows networks. In affected environments, the new DHCP known issue confirmed by Microsoft over the weekend prevents renewals of unicast IP addresses from applying correctly across network devices, which, by the way, causes enormous numbers of problems. The password era is ending, Microsoft warns, as it moves quickly to push a billion-plus users to make changes before it's too late. It's not alone. Google is also telling its users to move away from passwords, with most accounts now at risk. The answer is pass keys, which is what both Microsoft and Google suggest as the phishing-resistant alternative users should now move to. Google warns that more than half of users don't even use two-factor authentication yet, never mind passkeys, so there's some serious ground to cover. Microsoft's family tool is reportedly preventing the... I have a joke for that that I am not going to tell. Microsoft's family tool is reportedly preventing the Chrome browser from opening on some devices. Enabling family safety on Windows causes Chrome to close immediately after opening or fail to launch at all. Other web browsers like Firefox or Opera or Microsoft Edge are unaffected. The family safety feature is often used by schools and parents through Microsoft 365 subscriptions to limit online access for children. Shockingly, it seems Microsoft Edge is not affected at all, even though it shares much of its code base with Chrome. So, which browser is your favorite and why? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll free, 800-790-0415.
There's a
you could turn your mic on. That's
allowed.
Yeah,
I can turn it back on. Thank you. Didn't want to sneeze into the mic. There's a interesting security implication. All the browsers will save passwords for you. If you log into a Google account, Firefox right. account, Apple account. But they're only as good as your password for that account. So
right.
if someone gets your Google account, they get all your Google passwords too.
Right.
And your Apple account and your Apple.
That's
so
why you
versa.
Need strong passwords.
Yep.
And most of us don't have those.
Especially for email.
Right.
Most of the time people tell me they don't have an email password because their computer remembers it for them.
Right.
Well, you got a new computer. This one doesn't know it, so we have to
tell it.
We have to tell it what your computer
is. Gotta remember it at least once.
Yep.
That's why you have a password manager.
Yep.
All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Matt from Batavia, New York. What's up, Matt?
I've seen... damage that YouTube has been doing with my uBlock Origin Lite. They're shutting a lot of stuff down. That's not the big topic and issue today. The big topic and issue today is, have you guys ever heard of a Flipper Zero? How do they get away with this? People stealing Bluetooth garage security codes and all that and things like that. I just don't know how it's being able to allow to be made and sold here.
Yeah. Okay, so for those of you who don't know, Flipper Zero is a multi-tool, they're calling it, a multi-tool for geeks.
Multi-pass.
You're right. And it was originally designed for pen testers, people who penetration testers, people whose job it is to break into companies legally and then tell them how they did it so they could fix it. That's what a pen tester is, and it was
best movie ever is Sneakers with Robert Redford.
Robert Redford, and the idea is that it's a series of tools that make it easier that help a person break into a company. What somebody did was take all of those tools, stick it in a single little device that you can carry around in your pocket. It's tiny and it's. The one I saw was orange, so they look like toys.
Mm-hmm.
It then does all of those things, and it's nothing you can't do off a regular computer. It just put it all in one box for you. And why is it legal? Because nobody's made it illegal. Honestly, that's the only answer there really is.
And the problem is, well, it actually is illegal to break into someone's computer without permission.
Right. It is not illegal to have the tools
right,
to break into someone's
because
computer.
The good guys need those tools.
Right.
There have been a lot of cases where a good guy shows a security fault to a company, and the company sicks the police on them. Yep. What was the guy that actually died?
I can't remember his name.
Yeah, he was persecuted and prosecuted so much he committed suicide.
Yep.
He was the good guy trying to point out a flaw, and so a lot of security researchers are scared of this happening. And so it's, if you can find a company that has a, it's usually called a bug bounty, some official statement saying that if you find a flaw, we're not going to prosecute you. They need those same tools also. That's, and so that's the problem.
Right. And there were groups that used to be called Tiger Teams. I don't know if that's still a term they use, but they used to be called Tiger Teams. And they were hired by companies to break into that.
Now we've got red teams and blue teams.
Now we've got red teams, blue teams.
Red versus blue.
Right. But basically the idea was it is not illegal to own the tool. It is only illegal if you use it.
If you use it illegally.
Illegally, right. So if you are hired, so for example, if you're hired by a company, your Tiger Team is hired by a company to break into their business and then tell them how you did it, that's actually not illegal.
Yep, because they're giving you permission to do that.
And you need to have the tools to do that. There is a distribution of Linux called Kali Linux, K-A-L-I, that comes with all of those tools. All the Flipper people did was package those into a little toy.
And there's a code block called Metasploit.
Right.
Where that's the software that the bad guys use, and every time some new exploit is found, it's added to the Metasploit for the bad guys to use. So the good guys look at that, too, to find out. That's what we call a zero day, is when the good guys find a problem in the wild that no one knew about before it was found.
Right. So, for example, Kali Linux, again, has every single one of those tools. And you can go to the Kali website, Kali.org, K-A-L-I, and download Kali Linux, put it on a computer, and do all the same things that Flipper Zero does. Because owning those tools is not illegal. Depends on how you use them. And the same thing is true of Flipper Zero. So, for example, back when I was the systems administrator for the company that I worked for, I downloaded Kali Linux and spent a lot of time breaking into my own systems so that I could fix them. If I'd had Flipper Zero at the time, I would have walked around the building carrying that instead of a big, heavy laptop.
It's kind of like having a car. It's legal to own a car. It's illegal to speed. It's illegal to run people down.
Right.
But having the car itself is legal.
So at least currently, it is not illegal to own any of that stuff. It's only illegal if you use it in an illegal manner.
Which is already illegal.
Right.
Yeah.
Did that clear that up a little bit?
Yes, thanks for clearing that up. I really appreciate it. And I just hope some of these people out there, it don't get in the hands of the bad criminals, because, you know, the things with the gas stations and the stealing the credit card numbers and all that, Bluetooth chip things, and it's bad.
Yeah, always check the scanner, especially a gas station, if it looks different than you're used to. I know a lot of people will...
Don't put your card in, swipe it, don't swipe it.
Tap it,
or use your phone, or use your watch, or something else.
I know a lot of people will tug on the card reader just to make sure an add-on. Because that's what the bad guys do. They'll put a fake card reader on top of the real one. So
it looks identical.
Yeah, you stick your card into it. The bad guy gets all your card information while it goes in and completes the purchase like normal.
Yeah, because it's just a 3D printer thin plastic that they snap on over it.
Right.
So, unfortunately, we say don't give the bad guys any ideas, but they have all the ideas first.
Well, there you know. Well, I just got to say, I went on the website. Happy belated Father's Day, guys, to all of you. I'm just letting you know. Thanks for being
good. Thank you. You too, Matt. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, we didn't have the lounge last Sunday because it was Father's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have it last Wednesday because we were supposed to go out to dinner with old friends. And then, of course, we were supposed to go to the Finger Lakes, and they had the flooding everywhere.
Yeah.
So we all chickened out.
No, you were smart, too. not yeah, we to were, do yeah, there. We I mean, there were so many places that I was seeing different places that were having sinkholes.
Yep. Sinkholes and
in the middle of roads.
Well, it was great how fast the mapping programs caught on to flood warnings yeah. and routed you around them.
Yeah.
Well, that was it. You know, just as we were about to leave the house, one of the guys called and said, "What do you think?" And I looked at my phone and I said, "It looks like every 30 feet on the road down yeah. to the restaurant is another sinkhole or yep. or flood."
Yeah.
So no.
And how many cars were stuck? Because, oh, it doesn't look deep. Yeah, but that sinkhole in the middle of that you can't see.
Right, exactly. I mean, how many times do we see the comedy thing where a guy starts to go through a puddle and suddenly disappears?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's real.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like the ones with the kayaks going up and down the street.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, the one guy going down the street in a green kayak and just paddle along.
Yep, as long as they're happy. That's all that counts.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of this penetration testing software that is absolutely legal to own. I download Kali Linux. I use it regularly, in point of fact.
And it needs to be legal so the good guys can do their work.
Exactly right. I don't honestly use it much anymore, because I don't run my own business, but I test my network.
I like your stories about your classes where you could see everyone's network.
There was a program I downloaded one time called Vomit. Voice over misconfigured internet telephones. And it would let you eavesdrop on all the phone conversations going on over the network.
It was like listening to the CB radio in the days.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people are talking on their phones to somebody.
The scanners.
But they're using Wi-Fi connection, not the cellular connection. So it's going over, at that point, RIT's network. So I set up my laptop with it, and I went into the student lounge, and I turned it on, and I sat there for an hour, and I brought it back, because I was going to show my mm-hmm. class. I was teaching a class on this stuff. And thank God I listened to it ahead of time. There was nothing I felt comfortable yeah. presenting in front of my class.
"Hi, honey, I'm going to be late coming home tonight." Click. "Hi, honey, I'm on my way over."
That sort of thing, yes.
Yeah.
And people who were graphic about it. I was expecting, "Hey, do you want to meet for lunch?"
Or, yeah.
You know, have you gotten that assignment? When is it due? Oh, no. There was a whole lot of hormones going on in that lounge at that time of day.
Mm-hmm. Although not to be outdone with Vomit, there's the opposite called Spit. Spam over IP telephony.
Oh, I like it.
So I found a group talking about Vomit and Spit.
Nice. But yes, that's a thing. So if you are using an internet telephone... nowadays they're more encrypted. Nowadays they're better encrypted. And you know, back in the very early days they weren't encrypted at all because, hey, the internet.
Wow. Yeah.
And then later the encryption was bad, and now the encryption is actually pretty good.
Except there was a 1990 law with Kalia, where police were able to force the telephone companies to put a back door. So that they can get call logs. You see that on cop shows all the time. They click a couple buttons and get the call log.
Yep.
They have to pay $2-3 every time they ask. But
all you have to pay.
Yeah. And as the companies have made it easy to set up police portals.
Yep.
And so it's easy to get into one of those when you're not really the police.
Yeah, exactly.
And so the Chinese hackers have been in our phone system for 20 years. And there's no way to get them out without shutting down every single telephone in the country. And replacing all the hardware with new hardware and brand new software that came from, you know, write-only media.
Right.
Or read-only media.
That's what I was telling you before, one of the Bofang radios. They're a $29 radio, and you don't have to have a ham license if you're not going to broadcast on it.
Right.
You can set it up to literally scan any of the phone or police bands or anything else that you can listen to. And you can have it start at one end of the low end of the band and go right on up to the end of it. And it will sit there for, depending on how long you want to sit there and listen, and it'll just keep going up the band till it hits a signal. And then if you want to, if something's going on, you can just hit the PTT button and it'll stop there. and then you can continue on once that conversation goes on. Yep. But yeah, it'll do it all for you. And it's just a little handheld radio that you can sit there and have it scan.
And the question is, it's coming from China. So is there some sort of software in there that's sending any conversation? Because you can legally transmit.
Right, I can.
Is there software inside that $29 radio that's sending your stuff back to China? You cannot know.
No, you don't know.
You cannot know.
And that always annoyed me about the panic over Kaspersky software, because he's Russian. The Russians could demand he put a backdoor in. Well, the U.S. government could demand Symantec put a backdoor in.
Right, and half.
And yeah. So the funny thing is, it's not the government spying on us. It's Google and Facebook with the audio-video GPS recording
device. All the other companies.
We carry in our pocket all day long.
It's been said many, many times, George Orwell, if he was still alive, would laugh himself to death to see what we carry in our pockets.
That was such a crazy thing he wrote about that could never happen.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now we do it voluntarily. We pay to carry that thing around with us.
Yeah.
And we tell it everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, banking information, your personal information.
Yep.
I mean, you're...
Although I like the ACLU is trying to get your phone classified as your brain, extension of your brain. Things you know cannot be subpoenaed.
Right.
So it goes back to the old safe days. If you have a key to unlock a safe, the key can be subpoenaed. If you have a combination to unlock a safe, the combination is something you know cannot be subpoenaed because of Fifth Amendment protection.
And but the if same thing is true of your phone.
Right.
If you have a password or a thumbprint, they can coerce you to use it.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a
ID,
thumbprint or a face ID, they can coerce you to use it.
Or they just hold it up to your face without even telling you.
Right. But if it's a password, they cannot coerce you to give it.
Right. And so
I should point out that none of us are lawyers, and we don't even play them on television anymore. So, you know, take all of that with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
That's what we've heard.
So when a court orders you to turn over your passcode, you have to hire a better lawyer to argue that that's illegal.
Right.
So then the judge holds, because this has been cop shows too, the judge holds you in contempt until you decide to do it.
Right. If they legally compel you to do it, then it's different.
Yeah.
But they can't just say, give us your password.
Yeah, no. Give me a subpoena.
Right. Right. So, yeah, there's just a whole lot out there. But, you know, to go back to Flipper Zero and Kali and things like that, they are perfectly legal to own.
Mm-hmm.
They may not be legal to use, depending on where you use them, but they are perfectly legal to own.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I've got thumb drive with Kali Linux on it, and I've used it many times at work, and now I use it at home once in a while to check my network. And I hasten to say, nobody else's network, just mine.
I got a little upset that Google got in trouble for collecting network names. Part of their Street View cars, as they're driving around taking pictures of streets, is they collect network names to help associate the location of that picture.
Right.
Because every network broadcasts its name, but they got in trouble for collecting them. It's in the radio. Why?
Well, take a look at Amazon Sidewalk.
Yeah.
That music tells us that we are done with the first hour of this show, but don't despair. There's a whole other hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way.
Plenty of time to despair.
So you have time, plenty of time to despair. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, your calls, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 800-790-0400. 1-5. Take a bio break. Do what you got to do, but come on back because there's a whole lot more sound bites coming your way right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
This is 90.1 WGMC Grease Rochester, a public service of the Grease Central School District and official media partner of this year's Rochester International Jazz Festival.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
He's not listening either.
Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
I don't know what's on your phone, but it's clearly more important than this show.
It was.
Okay, good. And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and Dave's back to his phone. You know what? Interrupt him. Give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll free 800-790-0415.
You read that and I'll refill your water.
Oh, thank you. It's been nearly a week since Google rolled out the stable Android 16 build for Pixel devices. While the update brings a, and it's going to roll out to other things as time goes on, so remain calm. While it brings a few cool features and has been mostly stable, it also introduced a couple of issues. Soon, which I haven't found yet, so I'm very thankful for that. Soon after Android 16 began rolling out, users reported the back navigation gesture became unresponsive. Earlier this week, reports surfaced of tap to wake not working on some Pixel devices after updating to Android 16. Google seems to have fixed the former, at least, while the issue doesn't seem to be widespread. If you're still facing it, restarting the device is currently the only workaround. Some users noted that the bug surfaces more often when using third-party launchers, and switching back to the Pixel launcher might help. Still, it's frustrating that Google has addressed the bug internally, but hasn't released the fix. We don't yet know when the next Android 16 update will arrive, but the best guess is sometime next month, alongside the July security patch, meaning users might wait another 2 weeks or more for the fix to arrive. Google Messages is widely rolling out features like snooze notifications and delete for everyone to the stable channel. For the list of chats in the app, long pressing on a conversation reveals a new snooze icon. A clock. Tapping brings up the snooze notification panel and says that other members will not see you have snoozed this chat. There are four increments, 1 hour, 8 hours, 24 hours, and always. After doing so, the conversation will be grayed out, with a snooze icon underneath the time date. To undo, long press and hit the clock icon again. Google is rolling out the ability for users to have a back and forth. Oh, this, I tried this out and I love it. It amazed me. Google is rolling out the ability for users to have a back and forth voice conversation with AI mode. It's an experimental search feature that lets users ask complex multi-part questions. With the new Search Live integration, users can have free-flowing voice conversations with Search and explore links from across the web. Users will be able to access the feature by opening the Google app and tapping the new Live icon to ask their question aloud. They will then hear an AI-generated audio response, and they can follow up with another question. Google says the feature will be useful in instances where you're on the go or multitasking. For example, if you're packing for a trip, you can ask a question like, what are some tips for preventing a linen dress from wrinkling in a suitcase? You could follow up with another question like, what do I do if it still wrinkles? As you're having the conversation, you'll find links right on your screen if you want to dig deeper into your search. Because Search Live works in the background, you can continue the conversation while in another app. Plus, you have the option to tap the transcript button to view the text response and continue to ask questions by typing if you'd like to. This is all based on a custom version of Gemini with advanced voice capabilities. In the coming months, Google plans to bring more live capabilities to AI mode, including letting you ask questions based on what your phone's camera is seeing in real time. Are you ready to join the science fiction future and hold a conversation with your computer? Until then, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. Thank you.
Level, please. Up your shaft.
Yeah. Well, I have to say before we go to the phones, I tried this AI conversation thing. I was blown away. I sat there and I said, okay, give me three ideas on, I forget what it was about, I don't care, flower arranging, doesn't matter. It then gave me three ideas, and I said, expand on the third one. And it did. And then I said, could you please email that to me? And it came back and said, I am a virtual assistant, and I do not have access to email, but you can view the transcript and copy and paste. It blew me away. I was very impressed. For a first test, it was really pretty cool. Pretty cool. I'll be playing with that some more. I really kind of liked it. So one of the things is, of course, people learn in different ways. There are audio learners. There are visual learners. And if you're an oral learner, an audio learner, then the best way to learn is to listen. And now you can listen to what Google is searching, the answers that Google comes up with. It's really very nice. And, you know, I was telling Steve this earlier, it's not you know, Major Barrett level stuff yet. And who's the other one I said?
Rosie the Robot.
Oh, Rosie the Robot. But, you know, or pretty much any computer on any science fiction show that they talk to.
As long as it's not HAL.
Right.
Mm. Well, no, see, that's it. HAL thought he was doing everything right. He was doing what he was programmed to do.
Exactly right.
It's not his fault the scientists were in the way.
Right. But you know, so it's not quite at that level, but it is at the AI level that Google is at today, which is still pretty high. So it's pretty cool. All right. To the phones, our next caller is Bill from Greece, New York. What's up, Bill?
Hi, guys. I've got a dual boot Linux Windows computer. Every time I switch from Linux to Windows, the time is wrong. I've tried changing the time server twice. That didn't seem to help. What I have to do is go into adjust time and then sync now. Is there something I can do so when I switch from Linux to Windows, the time is correct?
What version of Windows?
Windows 11.
Try running, there's a little program that you can do in Windows. It's called Time Sync. And what it does is it'll keep your computer clock time in sync with your the atomic clock right down to just about the second.
Yeah, but he says he has to do that manual every time.
No.
That's a program that I can download?
Yeah, it's a TSR. So once you switch over into Windows, because it's a TSR, terminate, say, resident, it will automatically update for you.
How old is the computer?
Do I get that from the Windows Store?
No, you can just do a search on TimeSync.
Yeah, Steve has a very good question.
Yeah, how old is the computer?
About 6 months.
Okay, because sometimes it's the battery in the computer that keeps the clock, and when you shut off the computer to restart in the other OS, the clock can zero.
Now,
I don't think it's the battery.
There's also the fact that theoretically, Windows should set the time automatically. So if you go into time and language in the settings and look under date and time, there is an option to set the time automatically.
Yeah, to sync it.
I've done that, and it doesn't work. It goes back to GMT time.
Oh, that's not time then. That's time zone. You have to set.
No, it's not the time zone. I've set that too, and I've also set it manually in all three cases. When I come back from Linux, it's got 4 hours plus on what our time is.
So that sounds like the time zone is set differently between Mac and Windows. Windows and Linux.
I've got the time zone set for Eastern time.
Try, like I say, it won't hurt. I mean, it's just a simple program that you, in the Windows, you download and install.
Yeah, there's too many things called time sync that I'm not finding anything
that
looks official enough.
Time sync, and I couldn't find anything that I tried two or three, and they didn't do anything, and I started worrying about putting more stuff in the registry.
Here's something in the FOSS library. People with dual boot are running into that problem. In Linux, you fix it in Linux, and then Windows knows. So there's a
That's an interesting point.
Yeah.
If either the time or the zone are set wrong in Linux, it might change
in Linux. I get the correct time in Linux.
The other place to look is in your BIOS. Because Linux picks its time from Windows picks its time from the BIOS. So check in your BIOS to see what it's set to, both in terms of the time and the time zone.
And there's a Linux command, time and date CTL, to set your local time to the computer's built-in clock. So you can try setting that in Linux at the command line. And I'm posting a link to that now. So that's something to try there, too.
Okay, thanks. I'll look it up. Thank you.
Yeah, I would try the BIOS first, actually.
Yeah, because generally when the OS loads, it looks at the Internet and syncs the time.
Right.
So if you're using Wi-Fi, that may take 10 or 15 seconds to rejoin the Wi-Fi.
Right.
I've got a cable.
Okay.
Even so.
So it should rejoin. And the Ethernet is faster reconnecting than Wi-Fi, but.
Yeah, but even so. But again, if the computer itself is telling Windows it's in a different time zone, Windows may be saying, okay, I'll use that time zone instead. So check the BIOS.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Let us know.
Thanks.
Yeah, like I say, there's. I'd have to see the name of the, but it was called TimeSync that I have to use on my computers up there in the ham room, because one program that I use, it's literally all based on timing, and it's got to be within a second.
Yeah, I'm seeing
of
one
syncing.
I'm seeing one called Net Time, one called Atomic Clock Sync, one called Dimension, Fourth Dimension. It's because you're setting the fourth dimension. I would
right.
like that one, just for the pun alone.
Just for the name, yeah. The Internet runs on time.
Yeah.
You know, it's that simple. Keeping time is important. In most cases, it doesn't matter what the actual clock time is. What matters is that the pulses are the same. So, for example, for Ethernet and for Wi-Fi. But when it comes to the sort of programs that Steve runs, that Dave runs, you want to have, and for your logs and for just everything else that the average person does, you want to have the correct date time, and most machines will do that. But because there are at least three places you can set it, they all have to agree in order to get the right time.
And the GPS system is heavily dependent on being able to know the right time.
Right.
And it proved Einstein's theory of relativity, because we have to take into account the gravitational effects on time. Even the ISS, which is only orbiting at 400 kilometers, their time is slightly different. So Scott Kelly, who spent almost a year in space, is now a few milliseconds younger than he was before, with his twin brother back on Earth. And the GPS satellites are often at the 20,000-mile orbit. Right. So the farther away you are from a gravity well, the slower time goes.
Right. Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Henrietta, New York. What's up, Fred?
Well, I had the same problem that the previous caller had a couple of years ago, and I can't give you the exact, I can give you the exact commands, but they're probably out of date. But what you have to do is change the a default file on your Linux system from UTC equals yes to UTC equals no, and that's what fixes the problem. Here's the command I did, again, a few years ago with Ubuntu. It's sudo nano slash etc slash default slash rc capital S. That'll open up some default file for your clock stuff, and you got to look for UTC equals yes, change it to UTC equals no, and then save it.
Excellent. Thank you.
This is not going to be the exact stuff that he's looking for now, but that's what he's got to look for, is changing UTC equals yes to no. I ran through this exact same problem, again, a number of years ago.
So it stops setting it back to UTC.
Correct.
Oh, yeah, okay. Cool. All right, so I'm looking at that file right now, and that's not in my version, but I'm sure you could add UTC equals yes.
Well, this says change it from, like I said, this is Ubuntu 14, so this has been
right.
a while ago.
Right.
Like I say, I'm sure things have changed, but you're looking for something like this in whatever version of Linux he's using now.
Right, right, right. Very, very good. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, like I said, there's multiple places you can change stuff, and it gets weird how they interact with each other as well. You wouldn't think that Linux installation would in any way affect the Windows installation, but particularly if it makes a BIOS change, it could. So you want to be aware that those things happen, and that's why we get the big bucks. And speaking of, oh, I see. Okay, our next caller is Martin from Greece, New York. What's up, Martin?
I called a couple weeks ago about a file sharing problem with OneDrive, and you guys indicated I needed to take my files to the desktop because everything was under my personal folder in OneDrive.
Okay.
And what I've discovered that somehow even my desktop is in my personal folder. And I don't know how I did that or how that happened when I started.
That's what OneDrive does. Everything in your home folder goes to your OneDrive personal folder. You have to create a OneDrive public folder.
Oh, you have to create a separate one.
Yeah.
Okay. If I create a new folder there, is it automatically... But you said I had to keep going above till I get to the desktop.
No, above the desktop.
Above the desktop.
Yeah, in the user folder, I would imagine. I'm looking for a link from Microsoft.
Okay, so if I go to users Marty, there's a desktop folder there, there's a documents folder there.
Right, in that folder you can create a new folder and then right-click on it, and there should be an Outlook sharing option to tell you who you can share that folder with.
Yeah, so you're not creating a folder called public. You're creating
a
folder.
You could, but you don't want to because anyone will find it.
right. You create a new folder. You set it to be able to share. So, for example, either you've got let's say you're sharing it with your spouse,
which I am,
and they are in your address book. So you can say share with a person.
Yeah.
And then pick them from your address book. Or you can say share to anybody with the link. Then you copy the link, and whoever you send that to can get to that folder.
All right. That's what I had been doing, but they were in my personal folder, and that's what you guys indicated it wouldn't work. So now I'm in, for example, my user's Marty, and there's documents. And I thought I would be able to take that documents and right-click on it and do a share from there, but share is not an option.
It might be, well...
Oh, share properties, sharing.
Okay. Well, there's two types of sharing. There's Windows file sharing, and there's Outlook document sharing.
So I was trying to... Not Outlook. I was trying to
Not Outlook.
With,
OneDrive, yeah. Too many Microsoft
products.
Yeah, OneDrive.
Yeah. Yeah. But if that folder isn't in OneDrive...
There should be a OneDrive option in the properties.
Well, do you right-click on it, or is it that little person icon that's at the top of the folder?
Both, maybe.
I don't have it.
Okay, so in that same folder is a OneDrive folder. So if I create a OneDrive... sorry, let me see what happens when I do... All right, share from there. So there is share as an option. Okay, that might do it. So I think I was able to do this a couple weeks ago, but I couldn't recreate it. But I still sent that file, or I created a new file, shared it. The other person got it, but it still will only open... you probably don't remember, but we're using... Open Office, and I save them as an XLS file, for example, send it to him, and he can only view it.
Right.
He can't open it and modify it.
In that link setting menu, there's a button that says allow editing.
Right, and I believe I tried that. I'll have to try it again now that I'm in a different location, because we want to be able to share this stuff back and forth and update them continuously. Okay, so this is a couple different things.
Can I be honest?
Yep.
It's way easier to do this in Google Drive.
Well, I tried it in Google Drive, to be honest with you, and I was having the exact same problem. Because I also have Google Drive.
Interesting.
So how is it different or better?
Well, because in Google Drive, I just... There's a share button, and I said, here's, you know, I want to share it to anybody with the link. I sent the link to Steve, and he can now log into the exact same file I'm in. We can edit it simultaneously. I see his edits. He sees my edits.
Yeah, and well, that's using a Google Doc.
Yeah, that's what I said, didn't I?
Google Drive.
Excuse me, I beg your pardon.
You can share other document types in Google Drive like you do with OneDrive, but if you use Google Docs, then you can both be in the file at the same time as well.
So you have. So if I send him a file that's an XLS file and he tries to open it in Open Office, even though I set up his Open Office to open XLS files. It was still opening it in a read-only format.
Because you have to set the permissions properly when you're sharing a file. It may be easier to share a folder.
And are you sharing... Are you when you say you're sending him the file...
I'm sending... it was similar to OneDrive where you send him a link.
Okay,
And it would open up, but he could only view it, not edit it. I was having the same problem with both of them.
That's often true if you download it. If you edit it online, either with Google Docs or with Microsoft 365, you do not have that problem. But yes, if you're going to download it and send it to someone, you lose simultaneous editing and a whole bunch of other things.
Right.
But if that's the way you're going to do it, then you do have to set the permissions correctly to allow them to not just view it but to edit it. So, for example, when I shared the link with Steve to the Soundbites caller list, I had to tell it he was an editor.
Right.
Otherwise, he could only view it.
Okay. Is it better to try and do this? If I do this with Google Docs, where is the file actually located?
In Google Docs. So the two of you can edit it simultaneously. It remains online. Synchronization is automatic. You both see exactly the same thing at the same time. There's no point at which one of you has an outdated copy.
And then the second half of that is Google Drive will sync that file to your local computer as well.
Okay. So this might be better off with Google Docs. But if he just clicks it, it should open then in Google Docs with editability. He doesn't actually download it. It stays there, and then it gets copied to my local drive probably when it's done.
Right. Well, you can copy it to your local drive, and it does the sync in the background. It doesn't matter.
Right, okay.
You tell it you want to be able to work offline.
Right.
And then it will do all the syncing in the background. You don't have to do anything.
If you want to do simultaneous editing, it has to be in Google Docs Online.
Right.
Yeah, okay. We don't usually do that.
Right.
Okay.
All right. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Right. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour. Soundbites. Member-supported. Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, some of us at least are sound bites.
What?
The levels are never consistent.
Yeah. Yep.
And we have Walter from Greece, New York on the phone. What's up, Walter?
Good afternoon to all of you there.
Me too.
We have a situation that may be related to your conversation at the end of the first hour. In the mail, we received a solicitation from Google to join their device usage study. Have you heard of that?
I have, and that may be legit.
I think it definitely is, and it seems as if Google is, well, they're willing to pay to watch over everything you do on your smartphone.
Yep.
$540 a year if you are willing to share your website and data activity data.
Right.
I mean, it seems they're getting desperate. Are they getting desperate for more stuff? Because, I mean, you have things all over the place that they can be, like you said earlier on, you're giving away for free.
You'd think that Google wouldn't need to do this because they collect your data anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Well, but it's not legal to maintain most of it.
Yeah.
So, you don't get $540.
No, get points.
You get points. And those points are redeemable. So if you buy books or movies or whatever, or a computer, or not a computer, but a phone or a watch, you can, you know, you can redeem those points. But basically, yes, there is a thing. As to whether it's a thing you want to do, I can't.
Yeah, each individual's got to make their own decision.
But it is a thing.
Well, I can tell you that I won't be using it because I use an LG flip phone that is based on Android 4, I think.
Yeah, there you go.
So it's going to go nowhere.
Right. And the basic idea is they want to understand how people are actually using their devices, particularly to go to the Internet.
Yeah.
You know, what are they actually doing with them? The theory is that's so they can make better products.
Yeah.
I'm sure what they are really doing is figuring out how to make more money from those products. But
oh, sure.
The point is, the theory is they would
Well, they got to come up with new ideas because a lot of the ideas as far as improving phones or, you know, word processing and all these other things that we do day to day are in a hum mode that, you know, there's not much. That I got to have it. It's the latest, hottest, greatest thing.
And there's also trouble brewing for Google in the courts. They've lost two cases. Google is a monopoly in search, and it's a monopoly in browser. Advertising. Ironically, the suggested penalty for Google's monopoly in advertising is they have to sell Chrome.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Well, because Chrome is where all the advertising is collected.
I suppose, yeah.
But Chrome is a free variant of a open source program. So nobody owns it to begin with. So how can Google sell it? And so, but if Google has a direct relationship with you, they don't have to collect advertising on the internet. Maybe that's where it's coming from.
Well, and yes, and where do you go, and how does right. it best suit their needs and all of that
stuff? And that's why so many companies are now asking you to sign in, create a free account to get any type of information from them, because then they have a direct relationship from you and they can do whatever they want with your data.
Right. Did you sign up at the site?
No, they sent it to us by the mail. It just came directly to our household. In fact, it says New York State resident, and it was they said
mailing.
We have randomly selected your household to participate in this helpful research project.
Well, now I'm a little jealous that I didn't get one.
Me too. And we both have Pixel phones.
Yeah. So they've already got all our data. It doesn't matter. They don't need us.
There you go. There you go. Can I ask you one quick Linux religion question?
Please.
Okay. I like to read DistroWatch. I like to see what how they test certain distros. I like reading the comments. And as I'm looking through DistroWatch, it appears that there's a heavy emphasis now to harden Linux. And what I'm pointing to is, like with OpenSUSE, they've come up with their micro immutable and revolving operating systems.
Right.
You know, call that. Do you think that's the trend that Linux is heading to, and that do you think that will eventually help people want to go to Linux and get out of Windows?
Well, that's a large part of it, right? So for everybody else, hardening Linux means hardening it against intrusions.
Yep.
Right, so whether that's viruses or malware or thieves breaking it, whatever it is. And Linux is already pretty hard.
Yeah.
But they want it to be harder. And as more and more breaches are shown on Windows, hardening Linux becomes more and more attractive. So, yeah, I think that's one of the things. And, of course, there's, if you go to endof10.org, Windows 10 is dying. We all know that October 14th is the last day that you will get an update for Windows 10. And after that, you are open to everybody on the Internet. And so, one of the big recommendations at endof10.org is to go to Linux. And as Linux becomes harder and harder in terms of hardening it against intrusion, in this case, hard is better, as it becomes harder and harder, it becomes more and more a viable option and a safer option for people to take. Already very safe, in some ways much more safer than Windows.
Yes.
Excuse me, much more safer. What am I, 9? Much safer than Windows. Making it even safer, excuse me, even more safer is a goal. So that, yes, I think that hardening Linux is a goal that has been around for a while, and it shows no signs of abating.
Have you tried out OpenSUSE, Aon, or Kalpa, those new ones that they have?
Not recently.
No?
Not recently. And if you saw my multiple various to-do lists, you would either laugh or slap me. Or both.
Why not both?
Why not slap me and then laugh? But I have those kinds of things on my to-do list under Linux, and I don't have time.
I can understand.
But I know that and that's also Kali Linux is a hardened Linux, and in fact Kali is what you use to try to break through some of those others and see just how hard they really are.
Excellent. All right, well, I'll not take any more of your time. Thank you for your thoughts and opinions, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Walter. Have fun.
You too. Thanks.
Stay cool. Stay cool, Walter.
My wife likes filling out all those little survey forms and getting points all the time. And I keep telling her the security implications, and she doesn't care because she gets free stuff.
Yeah.
Which tends to be the sort of general consensus.
Yeah.
I don't care. You can have all my secure data as long as you give me something for free.
They did a test years ago where people gave away their passwords for chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
Chocolate. Yes.
There was
if you give me, and it wasn't just, you know, tell me a word and here's some chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
You give me your email password, I will look and see if it works. And if it does, I will give you a bar of chocolate. And people did it over and over and over again.
Yeah. There was a company that added, it was like around Christmas or something like that, and they had a checkbox on the order form where for the soul of your firstborn child will knock off 10 pounds or something. I think it was a British company. And hundreds of people checked it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like putting a sign up on the side of a wall and say, bang, head here.
Yes.
Yeah. And they do it.
Well, I like the guy that takes out a P.O. box and advertises learn how to make money fast.
Yes.
And for a dollar. And the instructions are open a P.O. box and put up posters, learn how to make money fast.
Yep.
As long as you're not promising any for you're delivering what you're promising.
They, the other scam, they had a solar dryer. Solar dryer?
Solar dryer.
You can sign up and get a solar dryer for $20.
Yeah.
And what they did is they turn around and then ship you a piece of clothesline.
Clothesline. Absolutely right.
Yep.
And clothespins.
Right. We were solar long before it became a thing in my household.
I like
when I was a kid.
There was a comedian, magician, performer, I can't remember his name, who staged a bunch of things like that to see what would happen. He rented a guard uniform, stood outside a bank, and said, night deposit is broken, give me your deposit. And people did.
People just did.
And then he brought the cameras out. Do you realize how stupid that was? And I could have been anybody. Well, you looked authority.
Yep.
But I love the one where he set up a fake valet stand. Got in, you know, in a white shirt and black slacks and had a velvet rope. Guy in a really fancy car came up. He gave him a ticket, took the keys. The people walked away. And then they disappeared.
Yep.
And set a camera looking at the spot. And, you know, like an hour later, they come back and he's looking around. But in this case, the guy's starting to get really, really, really angry.
Yeah.
So they come out with the cameras really quick and bring his car back up. No, sir. You know, we're on a TV show. We didn't really steal your car. You know?
I have seen a sign that says, remember what your valet looks like because we don't have one.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
I think one of my favorites was I tried to pay my cable bill, but you were closed. But the guy that was standing at the door said he would
take the money
for me. So why isn't my cable bill paid?
Right. In miscellaneous news, Apple has announced that the next version of macOS, macOS 26 Tahoe, will be the last version to support Intel-based Macs as they transition to fully supporting their own Apple Silicon line.
And Tahoe supports very few Intel-based Macs already.
Right. This is hardly new. Apple has a long history of chip hopping. From the Motorola 68K to the PowerPC to the Intel x86 and now their own Apple Silicon, and they've never been afraid to abandon people still using their older CPUs. Of course, you can still continue to use your old computers, but they'll become less and less secure as more exploits are found and left unpatched. Or, of course, you can always install Linux on them and use them for another decade or so until the thermal paste dies. That continues to be, I can tell you, you know, that bothers me. According to a new report, Google switched from Apple's Foundry to...
I have tons of thermal paste I can give to you.
I know. But then I have to break open the machine and undo 600 screws and everything else. According to a new report, Google switched from Samsung's Foundry to TSMC for the Tensor G5 chip in the upcoming Pixel 10 series was a shock for Samsung and is serving as a wake-up call for the company's Foundry efforts. Samsung is apparently in the midst of an internal inspection to analyze the case of Google switching from Samsung's Foundry to TSMC, referred to as the Google incident. Losing Google is a case that shows the complex problems of Samsung Foundry, and Google isn't alone in moving beyond Samsung. A report from late May further showed that Samsung is struggling to find customers for its chips in general due to TSMC's much higher yield. Where Samsung's yield is apparently around 50% for its 3-nanometer process, TSMC is said to be at 90%.
And TSMC makes all the Apple's chips, so they don't have any production capacity left.
Well, except they're building plants like mad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The UK, and that takes years. I know. I get it.
Yeah.
The UK Information Commissioner's Office, or ICO, has fined genetic testing provider 23andMe just over $3 million over serious security failings that led to a profoundly damaging data breach in 2023. They said the 23andMe failed to protect the sensitive data of UK residents who had their genotype data, health reports, and personal information stolen in credential stuffing attacks using stolen login credentials that went unnoticed for 5 months between April of 2023 and September of 2023. Now, this happened for all customers, of course, including those in the U.S., but in the U.K., they're doing something about it.
But 23andMe is now under bankruptcy. They're trying to sell it, and everyone wants to know what's going to happen to my spit.
Exactly right.
If you have a 23andMe account, you may want to log into your account and delete all your data before it gets sold to somebody you have no way of knowing.
Assuming that actually deletes your data.
Yeah.
The DuckDuckGo web browser has expanded its built-in scam blocker tool to protect against the broader range of online scams, including fake e-commerce, cryptocurrency exchanges, and scareware sites. DuckDuckGo is a privacy-focused web browser and search engine that doesn't track users' searches or browsing history. It blocks all trackers by default, does not engage in personalized search profiling, and offers powerful anonymity tools. On the other hand, we're broadcasting stuff all over the world, so give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
And into space.
And into space. There's a whole set of controversies going on, right? Google is removing a lot of the protections that you can add into Google Chrome. In fact, we had somebody call about that, how uBlock Origin has been partially blocked by Google, and so there's now uBlock Origin Lite, which at least does some stuff. You can still run a Pi-hole, which helps. And it doesn't help with YouTube, because those ads are coming from YouTube, so there's not a third party site that they can block. But there are just a lot of ways that you can still get around it. But there are a number of browsers that are similar to Google Chrome. They're based on the same Chromium engine, thank you, that Google uses. DuckDuckGo's browser, which is not available for Linux, I'm angry to say, is a very good one. Vivaldi is another very good one. Opera, of course, Firefox is not based on Chromium.
But one of the potential remedies in the Google lawsuit is that they have to stop paying companies to be the default search. So they apparently pay Apple like $20 billion a year to be the default search in Safari. They also pay Mozilla, I forget what that was, a lot lower. It was only a few hundred million. And Mozilla has come out, filed an amicus brief with the court saying, if Google stops that, we're dead.
Yeah.
Because Google's the only thing keeping this company alive. And the fact that Chromium is 90% Google employees.
Yes. And, by the way, we should mention that if in fact Google is paying Apple $20 billion a year, their shareholders are not going to be happy if that money just suddenly goes away.
And services are becoming a huge, I think it's the second largest piece of Apple's earnings pie.
Right. So, yeah, the reality is that Google makes just a metric bucket load of cash from search.
They're paying Apple $20 billion. How much are they earning?
Yeah, really?
Exactly. To make $20 billion effective.
That's my point. And on top of that, that's one of the problems Google has with AI, which is the fact that you can now ask AI a lot of the questions you used to ask Google, and there's no ads.
Yep.
And it's not going through Google.
Yet.
Well, and if it does have ads, they're not, that money's not going to Google.
No.
So if you still use Google search, the first thing you get is Google's AI, and then you get the real Google search.
Well,
but a lot of people are going straight.
And then the second thing you get is ads.
Yeah. A lot of people are going straight to Perplexity or Claude or one of the other AIs.
There are dozens of AIs. You can run your own with Ollama. You can use Notebook LM, although that's still a Google product. But right now that doesn't have ads right now. So there's just Google is suddenly discovering that, look, we have known forever that the only way people have found to reliably and consistently earn a living off the internet is through ads. Everything else is much, much less or sporadic.
But even advertising is down.
But now, yeah. Advertising is down to begin with.
Because money's tight.
And there are a whole bunch of other places you can go. Back in the day, your choices were Google or something terrible. Well, that, when you were doing search.
Then it's Google and Facebook.
Well, and then things like Facebook came along. Yeah.
You remember Alta Vista? Alta Vista was great.
It was great.
How did Google replace them so fast?
Yep. And nobody said, oh, I'm going to go Alta Vista that. But people say all the time, I'm going to Google that. Google has become a verb.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how ubiquitous Google is. I have a T-shirt that says, sometimes late at night I Google myself.
Yeah.
You know, it's become a verb and it's become a joke.
And then the answer is how many pages does it take before it finds actually you?
Yes, exactly right. So there's a lot involved in this lawsuit and what it means in terms of changing the face of many companies outside of Apple and changing the way we do things. So I've begun looking at not using Google as my search engine.
Yeah.
Begun looking at it. I don't have a result yet. I don't have anything I can tell you about it. But I've started to look into it. I've started to do some searching. I told you I tried some stuff on my phone. So far, the answers I get are great and don't include ads. Now, I haven't looked. Okay, so up at the top of the show, some point in the show, I talked about the new Pixel thing where you can talk to Google Assistant and it will answer you and you carry on a two-way conversation. And it's a real conversation. So I can say, show me six things about this. Tell me six things about this. Expand on number three. Oh, and can you tell me what colors that comes in or what, you know, however you want to go? And it's like a real conversation. You don't have to start back at the beginning every time.
Yep.
It also then shows you links on your phone. I haven't really paid attention to those yet, so I do not know if there are ads in there. But there's certainly, so far at least, no ads in the vocal
it's
part.
It's popping up in your face.
Right. And there's no ads. There's no ads in the vocal thing. You know, it said, you know, I suppose I could say, are there four stores that sell that? And then I would get ads in some way. But it really does come down to the point that we're seeing a profound change in the way the internet works. And a lot of it has to do with AI, and a lot of it has to just do with the fact that there's a whole bunch more companies out there doing the same thing that Google does. And Google's de facto monopoly is, I think, going away. And that changes what the company's like. Well, a decade ago, you wouldn't have said that Google, you know, 2 decades ago, you wouldn't have said that Google was going to come out with a phone. Why would they? Well, they needed to diversify. And so they now have Chromebooks and TVs and everything else. And we're still getting ads. I'm watching The Expanse on Amazon Prime. Okay, one episode a week approximately, but if I pause it, I get an ad.
There's a new video game coming based on it, which is funny because The Expanse started as an MMORPG.
Right.
And hey, let's make a TV show out of this. And that's why the background and characters are so rich, is because they built that for the game.
Right. Great series. Great series. If you're a reader, grab The Expanse. It's exceptional. The TV series is very good. I'm not done with it yet, so I don't know if it dies at the end, flags, and doesn't get as good. But I'll tell you, the series did not. It stayed it stayed cool and fresh all the way through. All right, we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in. We had really good questions this week. I shouldn't be surprised. We have very intelligent listeners. But we're done for another week. Join us tomorrow night in the lounge. And we will see you next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. See you in 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?